Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the first episode of Dreams, Memes, and Veggie Supremes. I feel as though we're going to have to justify that name, but
a little bit.
We'll do that after we rate the pizza.
Pizza time.
So at the start of each of these episodes, obviously, we've got a Veggie Supreme. That's a giveaway to why the name is called Dreams, Memes, Veggie Supremes. But we'll rate the pizza at the start. So this is a Domino's Spicy Veg Trio.
With the vegan cheese.
With the vegan cheese, yeah. So let's do it. All right.
Might need to skip some of this, but... Yeah.
Well, it's pretty solid.
A solid baseline, I reckon, for future pizzas to contend against.
We've got a lot of pizza to get through in Adelaide.
Rating, out of 10?
I'm going to give it a solid 8 for Ben.
Ooh. I'd give it a 7.
7?
Yeah, I reckon 7.
What do you reckon the best bit about it was?
I do like that vegan cheese.
Oh yeah, it's the best bit.
The vegan cheese is one of the better parts.
They've nailed it. Mm-hmm. Oh, they've nailed it. What do you reckon be improved?
The selection of veggies on it is a bit... Yeah. I wouldn't say it's quite a veggie supreme.
Yeah, I mean, it's just... I mean, really, there are no vegetables on it, if you think about it. I mean, onion and tomato go on. Is it just a... That's just kind of like a baseline.
Yeah, so it's just spinach.
So it's pretty much just spinach. But no, very good. Good job, Domino's. You worked hard on that vegan cheese. So a lot of you might have even been attracted here by the title to this video, because it is quite unique and it's quite a funny name. What we think, anyway. Mm,
we had a good giggle.
It was actually Jack's idea.
Yeah.
We came up with the name first and then built the rationale behind it. Always the best thing to do.
Start with the title and then work on the framework.
Yeah, pretty much. So the dreams aspect comes from the fact that we're going to be speaking about a lot of ideas on this show. So I use it almost as a synonym for ideas. So we're going to be covering a large variety of topics, but at the core mainly is going to be health. And well-being, health and well-being. We've got a lot of different topics to touch on there. So today, we just thought we wanted to speak about who we are, our kind of our origin story, and also veganism. And we'll touch on that in a bit. The memes component. If anyone knows us, you know that we're always up for a good laugh, and we don't take ourselves too seriously. The memes aspects come from that, and if you go on our Instagram page, you know that we always make original memes.
Friday meme day.
Friday is meme day. Yeah. So you'll know if you follow us on any of our social media that we do that quite often. And then Veggie Supremes, well, it's kind of self-explanatory right at this point. Mm-hmm. Every episode we're going to be getting on a pizza from a different location, or even making our own pizza.
Yep.
And yeah, well, there you go, he's stuck it in. And yeah, we're going to be rating the pizza. And this just essentially encompasses the fact that, I mean, Veggie Supremes kind of links in with the first topic that we're going to be speaking about today, which is veganism. So it kind of wraps it up all kind of nicely. Even though it sounds really novel, it's not.
Going into some of our, where we want this show to go and our kind of intentions for it, we want to start off just having some kind of nice, informative, interesting conversations with one another. And then what we really want to do down the road is kind of grow it and start to invite more people on who might have differences of opinions and different things to talk about.
Another large component that we want to bring into the episode, probably even in the next episode, episode 2, is an AMA component.
Mm.
So that'll be for both us and our guests. So well in advance, we will be promoting who we'll be having on the show.
Yeah.
So we've already got a few people lined up, but obviously not for specific shows just yet. So all that to come. But the AMA component is essentially we'll put out a call on our social media if anyone wants to ask any questions for us or the guest that comes on. And we'll answer that in a component. And you never know, like, if we get enough questions, we might even make the whole show and more of like an AMA show.
Mm.
Change it up a bit. The only real structure to it is the fact that we're going to be speaking about ideas that are centered on health. We're going to be eating pizza. And I would say that's about it. So, yeah, that's kind of the loose framework.
So do you want to take a minute to kind of introduce yourself, Benji?
Of course, yeah, definitely. Good idea. So I'm Ben. I'm co-owner, obviously, of Motive Fitness Nutrition. I'm currently studying nutrition at university, and that's kind of what gave me the drive to start Motive and Fitness and Nutrition with Jack. I'll give a bit more context. Jack was actually doing his personal training on his own. This is all stuff he wants to say, but it's relevant to me because I saw how he just started this business, and it really motivated me. I really wanted to get into something like that, and you know, be my own boss has always been something I've really been attracted to. And so when I saw Jack doing his PT business on his own, which is just called JB
Personal Training and Fitness.
Yeah.
It was little startup.
Yeah.
And dipping the toe in the water.
Mm, and it inspired me and loads of other of my friends as well, because we saw, oh, this is awesome what he's doing. And so like, I've got a massive passion for health and helping people, especially with weight loss and fitness. I love the fitness aspect and how it relates to nutrition. And so, well, kind of Jack and I just had pretty much both had the same idea, didn't we?
Mm.
Combine it and rebrand it. And that's what we did. So here I am. And now, yeah, I'm working with numerous clients. We've already made some great progress with some clients through nutrition and fitness. And yeah, I'm loving it. You, Jack, sorry. I know a lot of that's crossed over with you. But
I was working in a fast food restaurant for about 3 years or so. And at one point I just went, you know what, if I'm just going to be working my way through university, I'm going to do something that I enjoy rather than just getting by week by week. I did a pretty intensive personal training course over the uni break and then just started up straight away as soon as I was qualified, essentially, with not too much of an idea of how to run a business at that point, which is quite evident if you look at where I was back then. A few months down the road, spoke to Ben, as he just said. Some of my clients wanted some help with nutrition, and Ben was much more knowledgeable than me on it. So we just decided that it might be more efficient to team up.
As you can see.
Nutrition experts, yeah.
No, it's not contradictory in this line. So that's the rundown of kind of...
That's the mode of origin story.
Yeah, it's the mode of origin story. And what else are you doing in your spare time, Jack?
I'm at uni studying animal behaviour and psychology as a double degree, which is incredibly interesting. Really enjoy that. And then I'm also setting the very basic frameworks for a book in the future, mostly focusing around veganism, which we'll see how that goes. Keep everyone updated on that. Mm.
No, it's. I love the work that Jack's doing with that, with the book especially. I won't obviously give anything away. Yeah, I mean, I can't really say anything, can I? No, I can't really say anything. It's gonna be awesome. It's gonna be awesome, simple as that. And it's gonna be like nothing that's out there, I feel, so far. Personally, yeah, I'm studying nutrition, obviously, at university, but I've also got my fingers in some other pies. One of them is I love filmmaking. I've just got a massive passion for it. And in, you know, social media marketing in general as well. And so I'm a part of a business called Inbound Media, and I'm essentially head of the video department there. Hence why we've got quite a flashy setup, if I might say, without sounding too big-headed. But yeah, so I've just got a passion for videography, and that's what I love doing. I love making films that tell stories and allowing people who are doing great things to get their voices heard. So anyone who's got a sustainability or an ethical edge, a business that's doing something different, that's helping the planet and helping people, really drives me, and I want to get their stories told. So that's what I do and what we do essentially at Inbound Media. So if you want to check that out, I'll probably put some links in the description if you want to have a look at that. But yeah, so obviously it really leans into motive as well with Inbound, because obviously with me being in both, there's a good relationship there. Yeah, essentially we can have an edge over our competition with media content, with our marketing style. Providing value is something that we really want to do at Motive as well. That's just going back to what we're about at Motive, is really providing value up front, really help giving you the tools essentially to help you do it on your own. And even in our nutrition services and our fitness services and our combined services, that's what we're always doing. That's all we're doing. We're making you independent so that you can go on your own health journey. Take your health into your own hands. Too many PTs and too many nutritionists and anyone in the health industry, they just want you to be dependent.
Yeah, it's horrible to watch sometimes.
Oh, it is, yeah.
As soon as you get off their training program or stop training with them, you're just left completely pointless.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So that's one of our big edges. I would say that's definitely one of our main goals. So without further ado, let's go into the first topic, which is veganism.
Veganism.
So a lot of people might have clicked off the video by now. So first said, are we going to be speaking about veganism? Spoiler alert, we both are vegans. Mm. We thought we would have told you in the first minute, but we didn't. Mm. So essentially, we want to speak about the ethical framework of veganism and other arguments that come into it as well. And yeah. And how essentially breaking the stigma of what people have about just veganism.
Giving more so a breakdown of veganism than anything else.
So for any of you who don't know what veganism is or what a vegan is, we've got the official definition of veganism here. Jack, take it away.
Veganism is a way of living which seeks to exclude, as far as is possible and practicable, all forms of exploitation of and cruelty to animals for food, clothing, or for any other purpose.
Mm.
And that's put forward by the Vegan Society, which is the original, the people who coined the term vegan back in 1944.
Definitely. And that's a really important definition compared to a lot of other definitions that you might hear, like
Don't eat animals or their products.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
That's one of the definitions that you hear.
I mean, the Merriam-Webster one I know says that. Is someone who doesn't eat or use. Yeah, I think it's doesn't eat or use animal products, which has a lot of ethical and moral holes in it, essentially. It's not the act of eating animals that is immoral, or at least in my opinion.
The definition of vegan, according to Merriam-Webster, is a strict vegetarian who consumes no food such as meat, eggs, or dairy products that come from animals. Also, one who abstains from using animal products such as leather.
Yeah. And although that touches on a lot of the points, it's got a big hole in it, and that's the fact that it almost says that the point of, well, the ethical quarrel is the fact that you're eating the animal products. Mm. Am I right in saying that? And using leather. Even that's wrong, because yeah. I find nothing wrong. If you're wearing secondhand leather or something that you had previously when you weren't vegan, you bought it when you weren't vegan and you had a leather jacket, for example, wearing that's, there's no problem with that.
Yeah, I mean, there's no real ethical quarrel there with the vegan framework, which we'll probably get into in a moment,
because that
might leave a few people confused.
Yeah, definitely. And it's I feel as though people who do have a problem with that, or vegans who do have a problem with that, almost trying to be too pure.
Too dogmatic.
Yeah, too dogmatic and too pure.
Don't use any animal products, and they don't have an actual ethical framework. They just have the dogmatic framework of don't use the animal products.
Yeah. It's frustrating. And especially like with lab-grown meat, that's a perfect example.
Mm.
As long as the initial biopsy, the initial tissue sample was obtained in a way that didn't kill or harm the animal.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that. But people will still outrightly say, well, vegans will still outrightly say it's not vegan, even though there's been no harm caused there. I mean, that's what it's about. It's about harm. So Jack's much more educated on more of the ethical framework of veganism because of his book and looking into consciousness and all the rest. I'd like you
spoilers.
To...
Spoilers.
Yeah. Oh, that is a bit of a spoiler. Is that okay?
Essentially, you can look at it objectively and say, if you can admit that a world in which any conscious creature, every conscious creature, is suffering to the greatest extent possible, just imagine that for a second, everything is suffering as much as it possibly can for as long as it possibly can.
That's a horrible thought.
Exactly. If you can think of something worse than that, I think that you're not imagining hard enough. That is the word, if the word bad means something, if that's what it means, which means that any move away from that is a good thing. And we can use just that knowledge to go, okay, so suffering is bad and moving away from it is good. And that essentially sets up the ethical framework for veganism.
Would you say good moving away, or at least neutral? Or would you go as far to say it's good to move away from the bad?
Both.
I mean, if you move far enough away from the bad, then it becomes good. I'm seeing this on a scale of bad and good.
Well, no, sorry. I get what you mean now.
Yeah.
So if something's bad and you make it slightly less bad, you've still done move towards the good, which means you've made a good decision.
Yeah, I get it.
So, yeah,
good decision. Okay, yeah. That's a good way of pointing it. Yeah, I like that.
So it's still a bad situation, but it's less bad and therefore it's better, essentially.
Mm. Yeah.
Working around some of the terminology can be hard.
Definitely. Yeah.
A lot of philosophers smarter than us have
hit the nail on that. But you don't need to be a seasoned philosopher to know this. I mean, it's the way I see it, it's a simple extension of human rights. The same reason you grant rights to humans is the same reason why you should grant rights to animals. Not all rights. I'm not saying that animals should be able to walk into the polling booths and vote. Obviously, that's ridiculous. Or be given the right to drive. That's just pathetic. I'm saying the same basic rights that we give to humans. So not raising them to be killed and eaten. I would say the animals should be granted the same rights. And if you don't think so, then there's a good argument called Name the Trait. I think it was first coined by a YouTuber called Ask Yourself. Real name is Isaac Brown. Definitely check out some of his stuff if you're more interested in this. He's a smart dude. He's quite clued up in philosophy. And this is the point he always argues. And it's called Name the Trait. And you've got to essentially find a trait that's present in animals that would justify killing them. That's different from humans. I'm butchering that a bit. I know I am. It's not the official one.
Do you mean find a trait that's lacking in animals that humans possess?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So a lot of people would say, you know, intelligence. Well, just put that into the name the trait. Put that trait in. And then it's essentially get a human that's the same intelligence as an animal that you think is okay to kill. And then test it. So if you had a human who was at the level of intelligence of a cow, would you still think that's ethical to kill them? Obviously not. No, it wouldn't be.
Another common one is ownership. Mm. If you own the animal, are you allowed to kill them? Well, you just extend that. If you own a human, which is obviously a violation of human rights anyway, can you kill that human?
Mm.
No, it's obviously ethically wrong.
Mm.
As is the ownership itself.
Yeah, definitely. You can plug any trait into that. I've offered moral agency. There are certain humans who don't have moral agency. Do you think it's okay to kill them? Social contract's a big one. I've been seeing a lot in recent vegan debates, especially on YouTube. But that social contract doesn't justify anything.
That's I've not cool. heard of that one.
Do you know what a social contract is? Essentially, it's an unwritten contract that's just kind of accepted in society.
Oh, yeah.
So it is a social contract not to kill other people's pets, right? That would be a pretty clear social contract. Although that is grounded in law. A lot of social contracts are grounded in law.
Mm-hmm.
Law is essentially the written version of the social contract, I would say, anyway. So yeah, essentially, it kind of links in with your social group. They're not a part of your group. But like if people who aren't a part of your group or a part of your social contract, I can think of numerous examples. One being the North Sentinelese people. Northern Sentinelese people who live on the island in the Indian Ocean, I'm fairly sure. Is that right? They live on an island. They are secluded. They've been secluded since the beginning of time, pretty much, from the rest of society. So they're essentially tribespeople just running around on this island.
Mm-hmm.
They obviously do not have the same ethical code and moral code that we do in the West. But it would not be moral to go on the island and then kill all of them and butcher them. Of course it wouldn't. It's just barbaric. So putting social contracts into the name the trait argument fails yet again. Humans who aren't a part of your social contract, you wouldn't treat them the same. And you can essentially test this on your own. If you think of any, if you think of any trait possible, plug it in and you'll find that it just leads to absurdities.
Just quickly hopping back to what I was saying about the conscious well-being before and the suffering. At this point, we fairly clearly know that most, if not all, vertebrates are conscious. So that includes virtually everything we use for food. So fish, cows, pigs, all the mammals, birds, and so on. And we also know that a number of invertebrates are probably conscious, such as octopus and stuff like that.
Mm.
So there's not really an argument for saying, oh, well, they're less intelligent or anything like that, because they still possess the capability to suffer, feel pain, and so on, which puts them in the worst possible situation.
Definitely.
And decreasing their suffering increases the wellness. That's probably the best objective argument that you can make for veganism. Just that any move away from animal suffering increases the well-being objectively of everything. So it's objectively a good decision to make.
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of people would push back there, and I know like the likes of Sam Harris, who we're both fans of, he would argue that the net positivity of keeping those animals, like giving them a good life essentially, and then ending it short would be a net positive thing. What would you say to someone like him?
So, for example, Sam admits that factory farming is horrific. He straight up says that there is no justification for it.
I would say pretty much everyone says that. It's funny because even though 99% of like the meat we consume, the animal products we consume, is from factory farm conditions.
So it's
fascinating.
So a lot of smart people will say, oh, but a free range had a really lovely life and then is killed for its meat. Then because it had such a positive life, that overcomes any kind of negativity. But you can use the name the trait thing again. The only reason that killing something is right is if it's in self-defense or out of mercy. If someone's in a lot of pain and suffering, then it can be argued okay to kill them. And if something's coming at you, say a bear is running at you, you're not going to be thinking, oh, my vegan ethics prevent me from fighting back or anything like that.
Yeah, definitely.
If an animal has had a happy life and you're not preventing future suffering or anything like that when you're killing it, if you take that to a human case, that would be murder. I'm not going to use murder because that's specifically in the case of humans, but it's the equivalent ethically.
Yeah, I mean, if you say murder in the context of animals, you know exactly what you're talking about. It's an anthropocentric word, so it's relating to humans. But if you say murder animals, people know exactly what you mean.
It is
a bit of wordplay, but still.
It tugs on the heartstrings, I think, a bit more, which is why I don't like using it. I like just going coldly.
Yeah, kill
logic.
Yeah,
you're killing an animal, and you can't justify it, really. If you're worried about the animal's positive well-being, then it would be allowed to continue on. Whereas in the case of a factory farm, which we've already said are indefensible.
Yeah.
Killing an animal in there may be seen as a mercy because they're in great suffering consistently.
Yeah, this is what we're speaking about.
So, we were speaking about this earlier because I was thinking about it the other day. It's a bit of a paradox. The only way that you can justify killing an animal is excluding self-defense is if it's in a great deal of suffering, say in a factory farm. But you can't defend the act of it being in a factory farm. If an animal is, say, free range with a lovely life, you can't justify killing it.
Yeah, because then you're ending a good life.
Exactly.
And ending its life anyway. I would still argue that even in a factory farm condition, killing that animal is still immoral. It's still unethical because you could easily take the animal outside of that condition and provide it a better life. Although that's a sub point, I would still argue that putting them in that situation in the first place is obviously the most immoral thing.
Yeah. If the options are it continuing to live a life of such misery and being killed, it could be argued that the more merciful and ethical thing would be to kill it, which is quite an interesting thought experiment.
Yeah, it is. We can both agree the most immoral thing there is primate in that situation. I mean, I know a lot of people watching probably seen the conditions that they're kept in factory farms.
Just a quick Google search or looking at the Animals Australia Facebook page. Gruesome stuff.
Yeah, it's horrible.
Got some good stats here.
For each of these episodes, we will do, for the topic and for the guest that we have on, we will have like researched behind the scenes about what we're actually including.
So approximately 56 billion farm animals are killed every year, which is, to put that into perspective, that's 8 times the global human population every year being killed. More, approximately 1 trillion fish are killed every year, which that's a number that you need to see all the zeros for to really appreciate.
Yeah, but it's magnitudes of, well, it's separate magnitudes, isn't it?
I
don't think people even can visualize the jump from a million to a billion, never mind a billion to a trillion.
And approximately 100 million lab animals are killed every year.
That's a really interesting one.
It's quite an interesting one. I was going to ask you your thoughts on that, actually.
Lab animals?
We haven't spoken too much about
ethics about it. Yeah. It's a really hard one. I think one of the big points is the fact that a lot of animal research isn't applicable to humans. Obviously, we don't have a rat's physiology. We have a totally different physiology. I know it's a good segue into then you doing human research, and performing epidemiological research and other forms of research. But a lot of the time, it can be really unreliable. I can't reference a study to that. How you know the efficiency of using lab animals for human research, but it's so hard because like the amount of good you could do from sacrificing animals almost like that's got a religious connotation, but you know what I mean by when I say sacrificing. It could outweigh how unethical and how immoral it is to keep those lab animals and test on them.
So essentially
the outcome could justify the meat.
I think we're more or less in agreement there. I would take mostly a consequentialist stance on that.
Yeah, definitely.
If you have the ability to save thousands of human lives, then experimenting on some fewer number of creatures may be the more ethical thing to do. It would be almost unethical to not do so.
Yeah.
But I think in the case of industries like the cosmetic industry, there's almost no defense of those.
Yeah, it's always got to be in health research.
Medicine and stuff. Yeah.
It's always got to be. But even then, like applying a consequentialist framework to it, it might not work in the same way that you would apply it to other things because you really don't know if you're going to get the results that you want out of. You know what I mean? How long will it...
You have to be fairly sure that you're going to get some good data and some valuable data.
Which is why I was just going to say, I think it's a case-by-case basis.
Yeah,
I think 100%. If you've got a really high degree of knowing... a high degree of certainty in that the animal research will provide positive outcomes, net positive outcomes, I would adopt the kind of... consequentialist standpoint on that and then say it is justified. But yeah, it's such a hard topic to speak about. I mean, I'm sure a lot of vegans watching and that will like cringe and listening to this will cringe. If you do, think of some good arguments against it. I mean, I can't. I can't think of any good arguments except for the fact that, you know, you are killing the animal. Obviously, that's a horrible thing, but how many more lives will you save because of that?
That's essentially what you've got to weigh up and compare.
And especially humans are superior to animals, other non-human animals. That's something I believe.
In what ways?
In what way? Mm-hmm. Mostly, I would say consciousness. We've got a much higher degree of consciousness and obviously intelligence, although those two, they're correlated, intelligence and consciousness, right, in saying that?
Likely.
Yeah.
Most likely.
Yeah.
More so with the complexity of a brain. A more complex brain is likely to be more intelligent, and a more complex brain is also likely to hold more potential for higher levels of consciousness.
Yeah, yeah.
So they are correlated, so but in a very strange way to look at.
Definitely. It's a lot simpler than just that. Hey? I would definitely say that humans are up there with the most conscious creatures.
It's...
So, you know, sacrificing very little... and less conscious creatures to vastly increase the well-being and survival of higher conscious creatures. I would say that's a point to be made as well.
Yeah.
In support of using lab animals.
And that science is going to be quite interesting going forwards as we learn more about the nature of consciousness.
Definitely, yeah. For
all we know, there could only be one level of consciousness. You're either conscious or you're not conscious. It's like
it's like a switch. It's like a switch.
So as soon as animal's conscious, it could be as conscious as a human, in which case that argument would fall in on itself.
Definitely. Oh,
or
for sure.
You could have the different levels of consciousness, which is probably the prevailing theory at the moment, where humans are up there with the most conscious creatures, such as other primates and cetaceans like dolphins and whales. And
orcas, It's prickly territory to choppy waters to navigate.
It's an incomplete science at this point.
It's so hard. And to make ethical judgments on that is really hard. But just going back to what I was saying before, if you have the research, for example, I'm not sure if this happened, but no, it didn't happen with smallpox. Smallpox is the biggest killer of any disease ever to it. I think it's 300 million.
I can go for a quick Google.
Google it. I don't think, I'm just using this. This is just more of a theoretical, hypothetical thing here. If you've used animal research to cure or vaccinate something against something like smallpox, you've got that.
But again, that's what you're
300 million.
In the 20th century alone.
Oh, in the 20th century alone. Wow. 300 to 500 million deaths from smallpox. So I think something that has the potential to kill that many humans, and you were to able to stop that with the sacrifice of very small amount of lab animals, I would say that's justified.
And all, it also led to our entire knowledge of vaccines and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, yeah. Edward Jenner, good old Edward Jenner.
Saved a massive number of lives.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
If you compare the consequences of, say, the few original animals that were tested and perhaps harmed to the entirety of humanity that's been saved from such easily curable diseases, or preventable diseases, up until this point, it's almost a non-argument.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. But there are other arguments for veganism. So taking a bit of step back here now from ethics and going into health,
I'll let you take this one pretty much. Mostly nutrition-based.
Yeah, it is mostly nutrition. It's all nutrition-based. Although there are health benefits that come from the environment, like reduced pollution, but mostly focus on just the health of actually the food that you consume on a vegan diet. And it's mostly actually the food that you're avoiding. It's like a double whammy. You're increasing, most of the time, you're increasing your consumption of really healthy foods you might have had a steak in place of before. So you're avoiding unhealthy foods that are linked to chronic disease. Disclaimer straight away at the start of this, a vegan diet can be unhealthy. Yeah. And even when done healthy, it's not a miracle diet.
There's no magic involved with not eating meat.
There's no magic involved. First and foremost for me, for myself, and I can definitely say for you as well, Jack, I'll speak for you here. It's definitely the ethical that comes first. It's definitely the ethics that come first for us. And that's why we have a business that's, in a way, centered around this philosophy of veganism.
I thought you were about to call me a junk food vegan just then.
That's also true.
As we just finished the pizza.
Yeah, right. I would always argue veganism from an ethical standpoint.
Yeah.
But although I will tailor the approach to the individual. I know if I did not care about ethics, I would then argue the health or the environmental standpoints. Because I know that a lot of the time the ethics will follow. Once you've got one foot in the door, say with health or environment, the other foot will follow. The ethics will follow. I've seen that. I've seen that with loads of people. Because at first, we were just literally speaking about this before as well.
Yeah.
I would say no. Don't ever argue veganism from a health or environmental standpoint. There are too many holes, which is true. Still true. There's a lot of holes. You can argue it a lot better from the other side.
They don't work brilliantly as the sole. Reason, as ethics can work on its own.
Definitely.
With health and environmental reasons as supplements, essentially.
Yeah.
Whereas health and environmental factors can't really stand on their own.
Mm. Yeah, for sure. But yeah, I've adopted my belief now because I thought you'd never include that as your sole reasoning. Like, let them know, obviously, about the ethical framework and the sole reason of veganism, the framework behind veganism. But if that's not doing it for them and they need to hear some health or environmental arguments, do it. Because a lot of the time, the ethics will follow. Yeah, I think there's a bit of psychology going on there with maybe, like, even a bit of beneficial cognitive bias.
Mm.
Like, because they are vegan, even it may not be for ethical reasons. Confirmation bias, not cognitive bias. thank you. Because they are vegan.
Yeah.
Even though they're not vegan for ethical reasons, they are vegan. And so when they see things like factory farm footage and all the rest, it's just more effective for them.
It's just immediately going, oh, I'm not contributing to that.
Yeah.
Whereas I previously was there. And then they go, oh, maybe I've made a good ethical decision.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. That's the kind of thinking I think would cascade from someone going vegan for health and environment. But I think that needs to follow. I think you would never stay vegan if your primary sole reasons were health and or environment.
We've noticed that a few times, actually, with a few of our friends who originally went vegan around the same time as us, but mostly for health reasons or environmental reasons and more lacking in the ethical reasons, have since turned back to eating meat, simply because they don't see anything really wrong with it. If they don't really care about their health anymore, why would they stay vegan?
Mm.
Whereas you can't really turn off an ethical framework.
Yeah.
You can't just go, oh, I don't care about ethics anymore.
Mm.
I'm just going to
definitely
go back to how I was before.
Yeah, I would love to know if there's ever someone who's existed, a vegan who's existed, who fully understood the ethical principles and the ethical implications of veganism and really understood the framework, just like you and I do. I believe we do. And went back to eating meat. I just don't think that would happen. I really just don't think that would happen. Unless there was something, I don't know, they were sent to go live with an Inuit tribe, something like that, and they had to. But yet again, that leads into the definition of veganism, which is, you know, you've got to do it if it's practical. The health arguments actually got my foot in the door as well, which is why it was so funny for me. I didn't think that you should focus on the health arguments, even though that's actually how it happened to me. Yeah. I got my foot in the door through the health, and then what followed was the ethics.
And you went through your weird hippie stage.
Yeah, I went through a very weird hippie stage where pseudoscience was at the centre of my life.
talking about vibrations to me.
Yep, talking about vibrations and raising my vibration to make me more conscious. Whatever that means.
Yep.
There was more. There was a lot more. I don't really want to do it because it's too embarrassing. Maybe I'll do one more.
just give one example. Okay, one more.
Fluoride in the water. That's something I also believed in. I'm just going to have to take a sip of water now. Not scared anymore. It was actually a school project that got me out of the fluoride thing, though, specifically. I'm drifting off a bit here. But high fluoride will actually decrease IQ. There's been some research behind that. But the levels that are in water, and it has to be a long-term exposure, and really high. Like, we're talking...
just eating a tube of toothpaste a day.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. And, you know, an increasing amount will lead to dental fluorosis. But no, like, I was like, on another level with it, yeah, so... Like everything, I was on another level with a lot of stuff. But now I have critical thinking and evidence-based advice and recommendations at the core of what I believe in. I pretty much, we've spoken about this all the time, keep drifting off from the health here, but it links in. Critical thinking, I think that's pretty much all you should learn at school. Obviously, basic maths and English and all the rest, yeah, definitely. But integrate critical thinking around all of those topics, and even have like 50% of your what you do at school, more just solely critical thinking topics. So how to recognize what's good research, how to research, all the rest. Like there's so many examples I could use.
If you learn that kind of stuff as well, then you could be able to learn more about, say, science and stuff like that.
Yeah,
which and good science as well, not just.
Yeah, that's what I mean, because then you can learn about anything.
Mm.
Like, and I think that. That will happen. I think that change in the education system will happen, and I already have seen it been happening. I mean, we went to a very progressive school in that idea, very science based, yeah. And they had that you do it kind of mentality, and I think we're going to be seeing that a lot more, especially now because we have the internet. Like never before has information been so accessible to people and so quickly.
You sound like you're an old man. now that we've got the internet, not like back in my day.
It's so true. Like you cannot stop ideas from spreading now. You cannot stop ideas from spreading.
For good or for worse.
Yeah, but that's going to be a topic for another podcast. Mm. Oh, we've got to do that. Because, yeah, pseudoscience, but that's where critical thinking comes in. To be able to filter out the bullshit from what's real.
Yeah.
Yeah, simple as that. The health is what got me into it. So I was obviously going through a stage where I wanted to know what I wanted to do. I did not know. I was going to be an engineer. I was going to be a lawyer. And then I was flip-flopping around.
I didn't know about the lawyer? No, you never told me about that.
Oh, really? That was before, actually. An engineer. Probably before you met me. Like, when I was, like, 13.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah, you're obviously expected to know what you want to do for the rest of your life. Well, at least you're told the rest of your life when you're, like, 17. So I chose topics at high school that were all centered around engineering. So I did physics, I did spec maths, I did maths studies, and I did chemistry. Luckily, I did the chemistry because that's helped me a lot in my nutrition university education. And that's what got me into the door was the health. I saw that diet-related disease was the number one killer. Type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and cancer, they're all at the top. And that shocked me. I was like, wow, these are all preventable diseases through diet. I can do something about this. And so I just went down a rabbit hole and I found that a vegan diet was beneficial for the top three killers. Cancer, to a lesser extent, but still plays a pretty big preventative role, especially in epidemiological research.
Yeah.
Epidemiological just being population-based observation studies. So there is actually data other than epidemiological evidence that does show that a vegan diet as an intervention can help, especially with diabetes research. I'm pretty sure Dean Ornish has done most of that research, and also with cardiovascular disease and heart disease. Dr. Cobol Esselstein has done some amazing research, and he's actually found a way to reverse coronary artery disease. And that was through using a vegan diet and, I believe, a rigorous fitness regime. He actually reversed coronary artery disease. And that's the first, that's the only diet and lifestyle intervention that's ever shown that.
Yeah. So
that's pretty impressive. And that's mainly because of the reduction of consumption in saturated fat. Cholesterol, although the research around that is a bit muddy. Definitely saturated fat, though, which is mainly found in animal products. Also your coconut and your palm oil. So be careful of that. Still limited, but we are seeing some research about coconut and palm oil, actually. That's a bit different because it's mainly composed of medium-chain triglycerides, which is different from the saturated fats that's in animal. Anyway, I'm blabbering.
Big words.
big words. But yeah, so...
Lots of nutrition jargon.
Yeah. The jury's still out on coconut oil and palm oil.
Yeah.
No scientific consensus on that yet. But yeah, essentially... The benefits are there with cardiovascular disease and diabetes and especially and cancer to a certain extent as well.
Yep.
With prevention. Yeah. So it's fascinating. So with our clients, for example, massive benefits with weight loss as well. Just from our anecdotal evidence as well. But that's yet again present in the medical literature. Reducing BMI through a vegan diet is very significant. It's a very significant reduction. And so, yeah, that's something we really bank on with our clients. I mean, we had our client, Evan. Good lad, if you're watching, Evan. Hello to you.
Hi, Evan.
He lost 20 kilos in, was it 8 weeks? Maybe 10?
Yeah, maybe
10
a bit more, yeah.
Yeah, so 2 kilos a week it was around, I remember. Yeah, and he got sub 100, which was a big goal for him. And he's still chugging along. He's still doing great. So, good on you, Evan. Just a little anecdote there. I won't touch on that any longer because we're getting a bit on with time.
Push for time.
We'll just quickly touch on environmental factors.
Yeah, so just a few of the environmental arguments for veganism. Most of these revolve around the dietary needs and the spatial needs of livestock. Particularly cattle. Cattle require a lot of space in order to live.
Mm-hmm.
And the alternative to that is a factory farm, which we've already said isn't ideal.
Yeah.
So you either go down the incredibly ethically negative pathway of the factory farm, or you go through the environmentally costly route of the free range, mm-hmm. which we've already said it's unethical to kill anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I've just got a few little stats here, which are quite interesting to know. Animal agriculture is responsible for 18% of greenhouse gas emissions, which is more than the entirety of the combined exhaust from all transportation.
So that's which boats, is 13%. Planes, trains, everything. Is that the source from the UN?
Yeah, that's the UN source.
So very credible.
So 5% of water consumed in the US is by private homes, whereas 55% of water consumed in the US is for animal agriculture. So 11 times the amount used in all the private homes in the US is used for animal agriculture.
So that's water that goes into the crops mm-hmm. for them, for the grain. That's water that goes into actually feeding them, mm-hmm. Processing them. Yes, there's so much involved.
Animal agriculture is responsible for up to 91% of the Amazon deforestation. Mm-hmm. So that's, again, through just the land used to rear them and the land used to feed them.
It's funny because a lot of environmental organisations will say it's mining and logging. That's mainly the contributor.
Mm.
But it's animal agriculture is the vast.
But you get, and then the logging is essentially a side.
Yeah, it's full.
You log, you sell the trees and the wood, and then you put animals there.
Yeah.
This is a little cool statistic. A person who follows a vegan diet produces the equivalent of 50% less carbon dioxide, uses 1/11 of the oil, 1/13 of the water, and 1/18 of the land compared to a meat lover for their food. So that's essentially just talking about how much of a lower cost it is to eat plants, essentially, and grow plants over meat.
So when people say you can't make a difference, just you doing it, although it is mainly the group that makes a difference, that's a perfect example of how much, just individually, you make a difference every day.
And then the last little statistic I've got is that a farm with 2,500 dairy cows produces the same amount of waste as a city of 411,000 people, which is a bit different. Goes straight into river systems, lakes, and so on. And
pollution's a massive problem. I mean, I'm not sure if anyone watching or you have seen the aerial footage,
the drone footage of some
of the piggeries, especially. Piggeries are insane. Yeah. Water is like black, like red.
Yeah. There's like a red pool and a black pool, and one's for essentially the animal blood after the slaughter, and the other one's for waste.
Oh my gosh,
it's very dark.
Yeah. I thought it was both waste. No way. On all points, ethical, health, environmental. It's such an amazing thing to do. Like
it's the you said before that the biggest difference that one person can make to any of those factors, to their own health, to the environment, and for their own ethical. Essentially,
just feeling good about yourself,
more or less. Yeah. The best thing you can possibly do with the smallest amount of effort is just become vegan.
I mean, rather than reaching over for the cow's milk, just literally move to the right and get some soy milk. It's like choices like that, it's so easy, especially with now with all the new products that are coming out. Like, you just bought a plant based mince today, like that's it looks exactly like me. It's bizarre,
it's scarily similar.
They even put it in the meat aisle, and like now, where you can just literally just move 5 inches to the right and just pick up a different product. That's the alternative. It's vegan. It's crazy. Although I wouldn't place emphasis on meat replacements and all the rest. Whole foods, obviously, at the center of your diet, is the most important thing. But yeah,
it's just so convenient.
It's so convenient. And now, especially Australia, where we live, it's so convenient. And I know everywhere else it is. England, every Western country, the US.
Yeah,
it's so convenient. And there really isn't an excuse to do it. So I think on that note,
should we leave it there?
We'll wrap it up, eh?
All right.
Thank you so much for listening.
Thanks for listening, guys.
So yeah, we'll catch you in the next episode. We're not sure what the topic will be yet, but
leave a comment.
Yeah, we'll put another call out for questions, but please on this video, leave some questions below if you want to hear any. We probably won't get a lot of we might get a lot of engagement on our first episode. But hey, we'd love your comments down below, even if it's not for a question, it's unrelated. If you want to grill us in the comments section about me endorsing lab animals,
or any questions about the ethical framework at all, I'm always up for a bit of a debate on that.
And yeah, if you want to come on the show via Skype, we can do that too. Please just leave your comment below. Yeah, thank you again for watching or listening if you're listening to this, the audio version. We'll catch you next time.
See you guys.